Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining our weekly podcast. I'm Robin Lewis, founder and CEO of The Robin Report, which, by the way, is much more than a daily report. It really is a knowledge platform, as we view it, because and a platform from which we communicate thought leadership on various strategic topics, yes, through our reports, but also these podcasts, as well as webinars and hopefully live events somewhere in the future. So along with our chief strategist, Shelley Cohan, who's also a professor at FIT and Syracuse University, we welcome you to our weekly podcast and today's topic, the new retail workplace, a big one. And we're very excited to have two seasoned experts who've had many years of experience in the old pre-pandemic workplace and who are now helping their constituents and clients to shape their strategies and models for the new retail workplace. So we welcome and actually are very honored to have Barry Scardina from Cushman Wakefield and Rich Pettit from Columbus Consulting. And they will discuss, you know, how the COVID work experience has created new challenges, obviously, challenges to talent acquisition, to retention and development, as well as organizational challenges vis-a-vis culture. In a recent article, Columbus Consulting talked about the unique set of opportunities that will come with reimagining the workplace and how work gets done. Winners will be those who leverage this opportunity to innovate and create a competitive advantage.
Well, I think it's a great topic and it's so timely. So yeah. According to SHRM, SHRM's the Society of Human Resources, a recent study was put out by Business Group Health and Fidelity. 60% of companies say their employees will be returning under a hybrid model. But the real change, Robin, is, and you know I'm passionate about this, is a shift from a focus on work-life balance to the new post-pandemic mandate of life-work balance.
Shelley, you're so right about that. There has been a seismic shift in the way people are working today. And it's not just across the US, it's really globally. When we talk about this at Cushman and Wakefield with clients, we really try not to create generalizations because every geography and many, many different sectors and different industries are focusing on different ways to work. It was interesting when we talked to peers at locations in Texas and in Arizona, they came back to work very early in June of 2020 and have very high levels of people in their office. I personally work in New York City, and when I talk to partners in San Francisco and Chicago, the number of people back in the office are much lower. Nationally, the number of people who have returned to work on a, I would say, a normalized basis is hovering somewhere around 40%. But the real question is how many days a week are people going to come into the office, and what does that mean for office space? If we all return on the same day, we still need the same amount of office space. If we're going to work different days, it really creates a challenge around collaboration and building culture for an organization.
Yeah, you know, can we kind of break down the definition of a hybrid work environment? And are we seeing the new workplace across borders, across industries, et cetera? In other words, is this a global initiative? I would imagine that there are some functions that would work better in a hybrid model. And then, of course, obviously, there are others that may not be as effective as at all.
Yeah, absolutely, Robin. So first of all, I think, you know, there is some differentiation between hybrid work and creating flexibility. And you'll see across different industries, people are looking for really a bit of both. So there's, you know, a portion of when am I in the office? How often am I in the office? And what does that office environment look like? And then just around the flexibility of my work time. People got used to dropping their children off at school or being home to make dinner or perhaps being able to have things done in their home during the business day. And in some cases did work, you know, from 3 p.m. till 9 o'clock at night. And it really depends on, you know, what your role is and who you work with. And I think what's going to be really challenging for employers is to find equity across different types of roles and responsibilities, how there's still collaboration. And most importantly, if we're not in the same place, what does our culture look like? You know, and I think some of the things we'll unpack today is like, what does onboarding look like? What does that mean for a whole new generation of talent? To kind of get back to your earlier question, you know, I do think this is a global initiative. We do hear definitely in some countries that people are back to work and they're working hard and they're in the office 5 days a week. But for the most part, most people across most industries are sort of looking for that flexibility. And obviously, from an industry perspective, it really depends what you do. It's very hard to, you know, have a hybrid environment in a warehouse where, you know, there's tremendous demands to get product out the door. And so it's really going to depend on what you do, where you do it, and who you do it for. But the stories that everyone is talking about is New York City employees leaving and going to work in, you know, places that are much less expensive to live and working remotely. And so they're making those, you know, urban salaries in suburban environments. And that's really been a big story that's been out there.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Barry. Thank you for kind of breaking that down for us. Have you found, are there like certain business activities that require physical interaction to be effective? And also, have you learned anything in terms of which functions really need and should be collaborating together?
So, you know, just sort of shaping this around our conversation today around retail, I think long before the pandemic, retailers were starting to offer some degree of flexibility and some degree of work from home. I know I personally came from PVH and we were exploring a 4-day work week in the office, 1 day a week at home, and really had left it up to teams around their collaboration. And when I spoke to some of my friends in human resources across some of the companies I've worked for, there was still a desire even back then to sort of figure out this conundrum. People who are individual contributors obviously, you know, find this an easy way to work. People who are working in areas like finance or accounting or who are, you know, in technology are often able to work remotely. The other night I had a problem with my Wi-Fi and I was shocked to find out that the person working for Optimum was, I was, you know, talking to her from her home. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on and from a technology perspective. But, you know, as a former retail president, I struggle with how we develop a line, how we really lay down something and think about what the assortment's going to look like in the store, how we're all in the room and look at color in the same way. And so I think it from a design, merchandising, and, you know, visual mapping perspective, those moments of just sitting in a conference room together and really breathing the product and feeling it and thinking about what the consumer experience is going to be in the store, those moments together are important. I know during the pandemic, many of my friends shared that, you know, designers would come into the room one by one and put post-its up on products. And, you know, then the next person would come in and then the product development person would come in. And, you know, that is an extremely inefficient way of working. You know, you just really can't, you can't keep a product lifecycle calendar moving at any speed if you're working with post-it notes. So I think, you know, it's about finding the right balance and figuring out where people can be comfortable. And again, I'll go back to too, and also, you know, making sure people feel a part of a brand and understand the brand's ethos so that they can really carry that with them as they're developing a line.
I mean, I think the reality, anything that's creative requires a lot of interaction live, you know, physical interaction, and anything that requires all five of your human senses to do well. I mean, you know, imagine you're buying a food product, you know, it's like, well, how are you going to have a discussion around taste or experience if you're not in the physical space? And you certainly can't feel fabric when you're remotely. And, you know, the costs of having samples sent to everybody in their homes is certainly not something that's going to work out very well. And, you know, then just, I think your other question when you were talking about, have there been things that were learned in the remote working environment in terms of who collaborates and how they collaborate? I actually saw a lot of things in consulting experiences, you know, in some key projects where we were making some solution designs. And it was interesting when people were remote and we started to think about who are the right stakeholders to include in the conversation, it actually expanded because people actually had to stop and think about, well, who's the right expertise that we need to have involved in the process versus the people that they see every day. And, you know, what it made me think about is like, you know, the physical space or the way the office is set up influences how we do work, you know, and what we think about it, and actually sometimes confines it. And what I'm hoping is people will start to explore what this could mean differently. You know, an example I like to throw out there in the allocation and replenishment space is, yes, it's good for the allocation and replenishment person to be co-located with the merchant and the planner as they traditionally are in the home office. But there's a lot of synergy also if they were co-located in the distribution center and logistics side. And, you know, do we start to think about physical work differently where this person might split their time between the two and have an office space or a workspace in the DC, but also in with the product team? And they might start the week with the product team, but also spend time in the DC. And I think it'll actually hopefully reveal insights that'll just help us work better.
You know, Rich, to your point, and I remember when we moved planners and allocators next to merchants, that was so revolutionary, right? Or you were setting the world on fire 20 years ago. But, you know, to your point about how people can work together, the remote working and the using of Teams and Zooms, et cetera, really breaks down those barriers. So it's not even so much whether someone's sitting in the DC or sitting next to their planner, but they can be sitting anywhere because they can have these conversations, interactions. The question is, and you and I have talked about this, is how productive that is on Zoom or in Teams, you know, versus in the office. And I know, there's nothing more fun than running out of your office and running into someone else's and saying, what do you think about this? Or I just had an idea, or let's grab a group of people together and brainstorm about this. And then, but then there's nobody in the office to do that with because it's Tuesdays are your day to be at work, but it's not the, you know, the day of the merchants to be at work. And so those are the things that have to be sorted out. But you're right. You do break down a lot of walls by having, you know, the ability to use technology for meetings as well.
Well, and your example is so great. You know, just the other part is, you know, and it's funny, I've been consulting at this client for 2 years and I got to meet some of them in person for the first time literally last week. And it's just amazing how wrong a lot of my impressions that I got from Zoom and Teams were. I mean, you know, if running the gamut from physical characteristics, like people that I thought were short were actually tall and people that were tall were actually short. But also just how they interact. And like I had a wrong-headed impression about how they would collaborate and how they would work. And there's a certain amount of things that being physically together just changes, and you get more done and you get it done quicker. And the other part that was interesting, this team that I was interacting with, it was the first time that they had ever met each other. You know, most of them were new hires. The leader was new. 10% of the team actually works remote and is not tied to the home office. And it was literally the first time they'd seen each other together. Oh. So, you know, I think those are some of the challenges too. Like, you know, and Barry had talked about it earlier in terms of, how do you onboard? How do you, you know, because remote work is a lot easier for somebody that's established and has worked there for a long time and knows the network and knows who to connect with. But people that are brand spanking new, that's really hard.
I'll just tack on to it, and then Shelley, you can change the conversation. But just kind of tacking on to what you just said, Rich, you know, The other thing about, you know, hybrid working is that it really influences where you are in your career. So starting out, you know, whether it was retail or in my field in real estate, it's really hard to be on an island by yourself and, you know, not really understand how to navigate the organization, maybe not understand where all the tools are, have to call somebody when you need help. There's nobody to just walk over and ask. And also, I think for people who are kind of midway through their career, you know, when you're looking for the opportunity to make an impact on somebody, those moments when we're sitting in a conference room and someone just has a great idea or leans over and really shares an insight, those kind of are, you know, they're watered down on the technology. Half the people are looking down, people are on their phones, people are answering emails while they're talking to someone. And so, you know, those are two stages in your career where this is a little bit more challenging. And I think human resource leaders need to make sure that they're finding ways for people to have those special moments where they can elevate, they can train, they can develop.
So just for my own clarification, I mean, you guys have covered a lot and you may have covered part of this question. I want to ask, you know, how does this hybrid model impact the operating business? For example, you know, the merchandise calendar has specific dates, milestones, then product development has its own framework. So, you know, kind of specifically, how do all of these business operations work together with a common goal in mind in a hybrid model with obviously workers sprinkled all over the place, working in different countries, time zones, even cultures?
Well, so on the operating side, you know, a couple of things. First of all, that story that I shared with you about the business, and it was the first time that it actually come together. It was a big deal for them to try to be able to have the meeting because what they realized was they hadn't budgeted for the travel. So they actually had to get approval to be able to have the meeting. And so obviously that's something that operating leaders are going to have to think through, is like, what's the impact to travel budgets, and really be intentional. Where are the situations where we do need to have physical interactions, and who needs to be there, and, you know, make sure that you're thinking through all of those things. And then, you know, with respect to the product development calendar and the merchandising calendar, I think what happened with these remote ways of working and when people were forced to do it, they actually found ways to actually compress the product development calendar, you know, using these technologies that they typically didn't use before. So I think there is a tremendous opportunity to compress the calendar and get things to market quicker. And people should be identifying those opportunities and actually rethinking their calendars as a result of it.
Definitely. Well, I think, so one of the biggest questions I have, and I'm sure many leaders are trying to, you know, continually push their teams for innovations, but how does a business create these serendipitous moments that prompt inspiration and innovation that come from really informal interactions? You know, the best ideas come from these impromptu conversations at the water cooler, sitting in the break room, changing ideas. You know, how can this be replicated in a hybrid working model?
It's, you know, Shelley, it is really a big challenge. And to sort of expand upon that, you know, there's that old story. I took my team out for drinks on a Friday night and this person couldn't come because they take care of a child, and this person couldn't come for religious reasons, and this person had other plans. And so when we go out for drinks, I have an experience with a group of people. And the next time I look to somebody to do a project, just because I'm a person, I have a better relationship and a better insight about that group of people that went out for drinks with me. And that's an old human, you know, a human nature HR story. And so now you've got this, you know, this really difficult experience because some people want to be in the office. You know, if you have children at home, or, you know, you don't have the room to work from home, which we saw many people have, you know, especially people who live in cities. You know, you're in the office and then a lot of people are not, and you're all having different experiences. But I think one of the things that we did at Cushman that I thought was really great was we created our own water cooler moments. And so we had scheduled times for coffee, or we scheduled a group of people to problem solve something. And we really put emphasis around getting groups of people together and really brainstorming or talking through challenges. And it's certainly not the same thing as an impromptu meeting in you know, the cafeteria area, but it did foster a lot of communication and a lot of insight. And because we are a global organization and have offices, you know, all over, we got to meet people that we may not have normally met. So, you know, while I would go in to get, you know, a Diet Coke from the kitchen and there'd be someone there and we'd be solving, you know, discussing a situation or solving a problem, here I was meeting with people in London and Paris and Spain, and we were talking about the similarities and differences in our countries. And certainly during the height of the pandemic, it was great to get together and support each other and understand how things were moving around the globe and what challenges people were facing. And we've actually kept some of those calls intact, and we do a quarterly global call where we just sort of talk about the trends we're seeing and what's going on in retail around the world, because it's great to get those insights. So I think it's a heavy lift, certainly, to create something that should be happening sort of, you know, on its own. But I think with some care and thought, you can create those moments of, you know, collaboration and brainstorming and really do it in a way that actually invites people who may not have normally been there to be part of the discussion.
You know, this, on a real macro level, when I think of this and reflect upon the whole thing, this is like so many other things post-pandemic. There were so many unknowns going into the pandemic and huge amount more of unknowns coming out of it. I mean, when you think about it, this is really uncharted territory. I mean, you know, how retail brands can manage these teams. There's really no playbook, right? I mean, or proven successful models that can be applied across all retail companies. There are just like too many variables. You know, the industry, whether it's a traditional retail model, whether it's or a direct-to-consumer brand, a wholesale brand, or omnichannel model, it really requires constant innovation and creativity, a real connection to customers, and it has always had a lot of moving parts to drive a successful company from product development all the way down the value chain through distribution and finally to the ultimate customer, right?
Oh, I, very true. And there really is no clear roadmap. And I think, you know, this is kind of an area where, you know, retail's always been a reactive business, and there's been a lot of kicking the can down the road and see what, you know, to react to or how to pivot. But, you know, I think we're having the conversation today because this is an important topic to really be thinking about. And, you know, there are a lot of folks that actually made, you know, we're going to be hybrid and you can work remote and you only have to come to the office 10, 15% of the time, and they made those commitments to employees and, you know, might have hired them from remote locations, and they had to walk it back because they hadn't thought about, well, you know, is this role going to really be successful not being connected to the home office? I know that there was a case where, you know, a business made a hire and that they needed to have strong connection with the logistics operation and the distribution center, but they were located in Cincinnati and, you know, the facility was somewhere else, and that person ended up not being successful, and the business actually had to say, hey, we need you to relocate, you know, after the fact. So you know, I guess the moral of the story is, in working through this, people got to be real, you know, and it's got to be something that works for the business and works for the associates. And I think to, you know, while you're trying to work it out, because nobody has the answers, and we're going to see all this probably play out over the next several months, next several years, is, you know, engage with the associates, you know, engage with your folks and enter into a dialogue. And, you know, how do we make the business better? And I think, you know, improving, life-work balance does make the business better, because if people are happier, they're more productive. But, you know, what are ways that it can be done where everybody wins and the business gets stronger. And I think that's one of the key things is in this conversation, it's got to be about making the business better. And the way you make the business better is by making people's lives better.
Totally agree. That's a great point, Rich. I want to go back to something, Barry, you had mentioned earlier when we opened the podcast, and that is, you know, hiring of workers in this new hybrid model. I mean, talent acquisition and retention are really key, especially when we have an environment where we have this huge shortage of workers and higher employee demand. So employees are really demanding more from their employers. How does a company become, quote unquote, employer of choice in this hybrid market?
It's very complicated. And this morning we met with a client and our economist quoted that the unemployment rate is now just about down to where it was in 2019, I think in the 3 and change range. And so, you know, and there are a lot of open jobs, a lot of jobs to fill. And so, and I do think that employees are being very selective about where they want to work. And I think the term employer of choice has a new meaning because it goes, you know, beyond just diversity, equity, and inclusion to things like sustainability and flexibility and what kind of amenities are in the office. And, you know, so I think there's things like what are you offering in terms of benefits? I think there's a lot of challenges ahead for retail employers. And I do think that as retailers think about, you know, bringing in talent, they've got to look at, you know, number one, the types of people who have been most successful in their organization. What does it take to be successful here? What is the culture of the organization and how do people work together right now? You know, what are we building towards? What are the skill sets that we need? And I think, you know, they also need to look at the different generations of people, both that they own internally and that are out there looking for work. Different generations respond differently. They look for work differently. They have different work habits. And, you know, I'm not, I haven't studied this and I can't quote, you know, specifics, but it feels to me as a leader in an organization that there, I can't remember a time where there were so many generations of people in a workplace. You know, people are working into their 70s. And starting work in their early 20s. And that's a very wide group of people to manage. And they can't be managed in the same way. They don't learn in the same way. They don't use technology in the same way. And so all of these things really need to be thought about as you're bringing people back. And, you know, we're obviously very focused on the corporate office, but, you know, think about the store employees too, how we're communicating to people in the stores, how we're sharing, you know, visual mapping with them or instructions around floor sets or hours or changes in, you know, in health conditions, you know, that we've seen companies like Concrete and Ubik really rise up to kind of help us with that communication to the field and to employees and make sure that people are getting, excuse me, the information they need when they need it. And onboarding programs are going to be really critical. You know, mentoring programs, we found in our organization, there's never been more of a time where people really want to have a mentor, someone that they can really rely on, that can help them shape their career, that they can, you know, look to think about how are they going to move forward. Organizations need to be more focused on succession planning. If Rich is at work 3 days a week and I'm only there two, does he have a better opportunity of being promoted? I don't think so. I think they would like me better, but just let's just say, you know, arguments.
Obviously.
But it's true, Barry, you're exactly right. You'd get more FaceTime in the office, you know, people that are doing remote.
And as an HR leader, how do I actually prove that I didn't do that? You know, that's going to be the other thing is to make people feel like there is real equity in the workplace. And then I think, you know, in terms of, you know, thinking about meetings and touch points, you know, there's going to need to be, you know, continued evolution around technology. What's been really most exciting to see as an ex-retailer is just how quickly technology has evolved. And even beyond Slack, Teams, Zoom, Google, I'm trying to think of 8,000 other ways, you know, people communicate with us. You know, there's just been a lot of technology evolving. And I do think people are looking for what's going to be the way we work in the future and what does that mean from a tech perspective. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. I think Rich said it well, and Shelly, you may have also, or Robin, there's no roadmap. And so the challenge with this is that we're learning real time. We're going to make mistakes real time. Our organization is trying to share insights and information with people relative to coming back to the office and things that people should think about. And that's evolving really rapidly, especially globally. But if you look at it as a challenge and an opportunity, we're going to learn a lot. And I think we're really going to reshape what the landscape looks like. And I think that's a good thing. I'm not sure it's a good thing to be at work at 7:30 in the morning and stay there till 8 o'clock at night and never have a meal with your family and in travel 5 days a week, 3 weeks, you know, a year. I think that, you know, we've all learned that there's a balance is good. Exercise is good. You know, meditation is good. And so, you know, I think it's going to be an exciting time to see where retailers land in terms of finding that flexibility.
Yeah. You know, you touched on the technology. This is such an incredible topic that we're covering here, and you guys are incredible. But you know, yeah, the technology's got to evolve, right? It's got to go beyond Zoom, beyond Google Meet. There's got to be other considerations that management should be thinking about in terms of technology, you know, role of VR, showrooms, visual merchandising, better meeting rooms with improved technology, technology to create, you know, competitive advantage. I don't know. There's a lot of other stuff, and you guys have been touching on it. But so technology, I guess, is going to be a big part of this.
Well, you know, I agree. And, you know, part of it, what's interesting is a lot of the technologies that you're seeing evolve out there, they've been around a while, but they weren't being utilized, you know, to the extent that they are now. So, I mean, it was almost like IT on steroids, and people deployed a lot of things really quickly because they had to. And, you know, on some of these things, like collaboration platforms, even, you know, Zoom, Teams, Slack, Jira, those are things that the IT group has been using, you know, and your organization's been using for a long time. But now all of a sudden you got merchandising and all the functions using things. And I think what you're starting to see is like Skunkworks innovation on steroids out there, because people come together, they form small teams, they solve problems and at much greater speed. So, you know, I think the thing that's really exciting is you're going to see a lot of these things catapult innovation in retailers' business go forward. The other thing, you know, though, that the sore spot is, it's really like in this hybrid interaction, you know, something's all digital, it works pretty well. If it's all physical, it works pretty well. But when you start getting into blended ways of operating, the technology just doesn't work that well. And, you know, so I think obviously, I don't know what it's going to look like necessarily. You know, I'm hoping it's not everybody with a laptop plugging in that's in a physical space and staring at their screen when they're physically together to have the, you know, deal with the folks that are remote. And I've seen a lot of that. That's how people have been coping. But there's got to be a better solution than what the conference room of the future look like and how these blended interactions are going to work. And that, you know, that's more on the collaboration space. But, you know, the other thing, and, you know, Barry brought it up, you know, AR, augmented reality, virtual reality, 3D technology, the metaverse, all of that stuff, I think its time has come and you're going to start to see a lot more happen. And I think the product development space, you know, those types of collaborative platforms are going to be able to increase speed to market and take space or take waste out of the system and take costs out of the system as well. The other thing, you know, is, and these have been around for a while, open source design platforms. So, you know, now that things are remote, you know, you take a company like Fashion for Globe, and that's basically a marketplace where designers and sourcing people are out there, and you can actually post a problem and expand your universe of ideas and get more product innovation, because literally, you know, your design team doesn't just have to be in New York. You can have they can be anywhere contributing ideas. And it's actually something Hermes has done with their open source scarf design contest for years. So I think, you know, a lot more of that's going to happen. And I think the other thing that's going to be exciting is to see use of that spill over into the e-commerce space. So, you know, I think the next gen e-commerce sites are going to use things like 3D images and ways to communicate texture. And it's going to be a lot more robust shopping experience than it is today.
Well, one thing we didn't really touch on, and I think it goes back, Shelley, to your conversation of like the water cooler discussion is, you know, really operating in the metaverse. And so I think, you know, that's going to be really interesting to watch from a design perspective, from an understanding of consumer journey and engagement to watching people's shopping habits. I think that this is emerging really quickly. A lot of the luxury companies are very excited about it, and certainly a lot of the fashion companies. And it's going to give us, I think, insight into consumer behavior. I gave an example the other day. I was at I was in a conversation. We were talking about, you know, the metaverse. And imagine that you're in this mall and you are interested in a high-end luxury product and you feel uncomfortable. You know, you don't want to go into the store physically. You can go into the metaverse and spend as much time as you want with the product and put it on your avatar and, you know, really understand the look and feel of it and understand how many, you know, zip pockets it has or whatever you're looking for. And then now that you have real understanding, the company can actually just send you an email and say, I understand that you're interested in this product and we'd like to, and here's, you know, we can offer to send it to your house now that you've done some time exploring with it. There's going to be, you know, a lot of people think about the metaverse kind of copying real life, but I think it's going to be the other way. I think we're going to learn a lot about consumers, behavior, product, you know, what people are looking for in terms of design from, you know, these digital moments. And that's a great place if you have a digital office. You know, imagine putting on glasses and you're in the office and you and I are having lunch together and it's not through Zoom. It's pretty crazy. And I have to say it's a little bit of beyond what I exactly comprehend at this moment, but it's happening. And I think it's going to be exciting to be part of it. It's happening.
Yeah. You know, God, we are,
we need another podcast for that.
That's right.
We are structurally, economically, structurally, strategically in every aspect of our entire economy is like the beginning of the Industrial Revolution and the Model T Ford rolling off the assembly line, if you can take that metaphor, because I think it really applies here. All of these enormous changes, all of the unknowns, no playbooks, whatever. I really do believe it's like a revolutionary period. And perhaps this may be one of the biggest issues across the entire economy coming out of this work from home pandemic. You know, its impact on productivity or not, efficiencies or not, new family structures, you know, changes in behavior before and after the workday ends. You guys have touched on that, you know, like gaining hours of commuting in the morning or for other activities like going to the gym or jogging and so forth. And, you know, joining friends for a cocktail after work. I mean, all of this is changing. I think back to Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. He said, and the Goldman Sachs CEOs, well, they say, okay, you guys, you're all coming back to work. Oh, no, it's not happening there, right? So, and this is going on across all industries and so forth. Anyway, along with all the dynamics we talked about today, and believe me when I say that you two guys are incredibly wise in this area. And, you know, there's got to be a lot of retailers and brands and so forth that could use your help. So the sum total of this issue, how it will evolve, as I said, is nothing less than transformative for the retail industry and beyond. And And Barry and Rich, thank you so much again. This was a huge learning experience for me, and I'm sure our entire audience. Right, Shelley?
Absolutely. Thank you both so much for joining us today. And for our listeners, you can find more of our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Buzzsprout, and therobinreport.com. And you can also look for us on YouTube, where we broadcast our podcast there as well. And please make sure to follow us on social media, link in with us, and follow us on Twitter to find the latest thoughts about the industry.
And I want to thank all of you again. And as I always do, I ask that if any of you have a topic that you would love Shelley and I to cover at some point, please email me at robin@therobinreport.com. And we'll take a look at it, see if we can't do it. Thanks again. And also, by the way, I don't want to forget to, for Barry and Rich, if you guys, any of you out there listening and watching, if you want to get a hold of either one of them, I'm going to ask them to give you their contact numbers. Barry, why don't you?
Sure. You can certainly link in with me, Barry Scardina, or email me at barry.scardina@cushwake.com.
And if you want to reach out to me, you can reach me via LinkedIn, Richard Perrat. And also you can visit our Columbus Consulting website. I'm listed out there. And if you want to email me directly, it's rpedott, P-E-D-O-T-T, at columbusconsulting.com.
Thank you very much again, everybody. And do reach out to them. They are experts. Okay, thanks.